Let's talk racing. This is Chasing Checkers with Chase McKay.
Checkered flag is in the air.
Oh, yeah! Woo!
Racing lives here. Your sports live here.
All right, boys, let's do this.
On the Game Nashville Sports Network.
And hello again, everybody. How are you doing? Chase McCabe with you. And it is time once again for Chasing Checkers. It's been a minute, but we are back and we got the video element going here on YouTube. You can subscribe to not only the Chasing Checkers YouTube channel, which I encourage you to do for exclusive content at Chasing Checkers, but also the 1025 The Game YouTube at 1025 The Game. And you can, of course, hear this show on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock each week on 1025 The Game, or get it on demand wherever you get your podcasts or YouTube and all of that. Like I mentioned, there are a lot of different options you can take in our content. And so be sure to check it all out. But we're going to talk some racing with you. Also, Zane Smith, Chase Briscoe. I had some conversations with them before the Texas race, but you'll hear those conversations on today's show. But let's talk about Texas, because how about Chase Elliott? He becomes the second driver this year to get multiple wins. Of course, we know Tyler Reddick has had five on the season. He has been very, very good. But Chase Elliott has been consistent and got the win at Texas. Here is the driver of the number nine talking about his win.
I feel like just a lot of hard work, you know, from the entire team, like not just the people here at the racetrack, but the people that work in the shop every day and all week. And we fired off the year, and truthfully, I think just as a group haven't been as strong as we, you know, want to be or expect to be, and have just dug in and put our heads down and gone to work. We tested at Wilkesboro earlier in the year, and then Kyle tested at Chicago last week, and or maybe a couple weeks ago, but nonetheless in the last couple weeks. And I think all those things, you just, you know, you start putting pieces together and improving and, you know, getting to a good place. And then you combine that with, you know, just a really good day of execution for our team in particular, and wound up with a great result. So really, really proud of that. You know, like you mentioned, you know, and I knew it, you know, right at Martinsville. I was like, man, we've never won a race this early, and, you know, much less to, you know, now have two this early in the year. I think is, you know, really, I'm really proud of that, and I'm proud of our team for that, because anytime you can check off new boxes in this sport when you've been doing it for 10 plus years is cool, and it's hard to do. It's hard to win, and so I'm really proud of our team for that, and just proud of the day that we had. It was a, you know, I would say one of our strongest races that we've had in quite some time when you look at just all of the different factors of the event, from restarts to pit road to race strategy to, you know, me behind the wheel. Just all of it, I thought, was elevated and you know, was really performing at a high level, and super proud of our team for that.
Chase Elliott was phenomenal. That is really the best way to put it. With what he did on the day, leading 87 laps en route to the victory. And, you know, as he said, second win of the year. As you can see here, the results of Chase Elliott, he led those 87 laps. He had the best lap. He got a total of 69 points. Denny Hamlin was second, trying to chase him down. Great day for Alex Bowman. Then Tyler Reddick, Chris Buescher, Daniel Suarez, Carson Hocevar, William Byron, Bubba Wallace, and Ryan Blaney. So you had three of the Hendrick cars finish in the top 10. And hasn't been as consistent of a year for Hendrick Motorsports yet. You know, not what we're used to at the very least, but it seems like, especially the 9 car, he is coming on. And Jeff Gordon, who is the chairman, of course, there at Hendrick Motorsports, talked about consistency and just how important that can be to winning a championship.
Yeah, I mean, consistency helps because you're not trying to reinvent the wheel, right? You're fine tuning. You're like, hey, we're good. We need to be better. Let's keep working these areas because we must be doing something right. So, you know, at least the consistency keeps you in kind of a flow and a direction that I think you can build on and only get better. But if you don't win every once in a while, like I've always said, if you don't win about every 8 to 10 races, man, just the hard work drains you, the whole team, driver, team, everybody, pit crew. You know, you got to have these victory, these mini victories. It could be on pit road, it could be leading laps, it could be, you know, not just a win of a race, but those race wins are so critical, I think, to a team's season and success, because that builds the confidence to another level that not only are we heading in the right direction, but we're capable of winning it all. If you win on a consistent basis, then again, that's what adds to a championship caliber team. But you know, right now the 9 team, I mean, I think they've you know, I don't think we've been up against the Toyotas this year and the Fords at some other places, and yet that 9 team has performed at such a high level as a team that's just kept them in the game and then given them the opportunities to capitalize at Martinsville and here. And I just hope that this can now help us move forward and continue to build on that and get even stronger.
I mean, I feel like it will, because just the way Chase Elliott has run. And you know what was interesting? When NASCAR announced that they were going back to the Chase format, no pun intended, all of us that have watched the sport for a long time and cover the sport felt like this was going to benefit Chase Elliott, because he's a good points racer and obviously he knows how to win as well. You look at the standings at this point in time, Tyler Reddick still leads, and we figured that with the 5 wins that he has. But Chase Elliott now with those 2 wins, he's moved up a spot. He's 3rd in the standings and he's only 117 back of Tyler Reddick. So certainly within striking distance. Denny Hamlin is too. He's got 1 win, but he's been very consistent with 5 top fives. He's 109 points back. And then Blaney, Chris Buescher, Carson Hocevar, Ty Gibbs, Kyle Larson, Brad Keselowski, William Byron, the top 10, the top 16 drivers, of course, will make it into the chase for the championship. And so, you know, right now Chase Briscoe is on the cutoff line. He moved into the good, the cushion is not very very good for him, so he's got some work to do, that is for sure. But consistency is going to be key. You know, several people mentioned that it was the second win of the year for Chase Elliott. It's the quickest in his career that he's gotten to multiple race wins, and he talked about that.
It is. I mean, race wins are certainly what we show up each week to do. So yeah, I mean, obviously that's the goal every time we come to the racetrack. And I think having a win early at Martinsville, and I said it, I think I said it to you guys then and there, you know, it's like, it's not like, oh, hey, the pressure's off, we have a win. It's, man, we have a lot longer period of time to build on that. Like that's genuinely where my mind was at. And, to be able to come out here and to perform like we did, you know, I thought our car was solid yesterday, and I thought that I probably underperformed our qualifying effort. I was disappointed in that from just my perspective. But you know, again, great changes overnight. Like just the whole day was executed really well throughout our whole team and the things that we can control. And those are the kind of things you have to do, I think, to be successful and use that longer runway that we've earned by having a win early into, you know, compounding and hopefully adding to it beyond here, I hope.
And look, he's got a chance to do it this weekend. They go to Watkins Glen for the Go Bowling at the Glen. And we know that Chase Elliott has been very good on road courses in his career. Now, he was a little better on in the old car. And of all the road courses, Watkins Glen has definitely been his worst. Average finish of 25.7. So can he turn that around this weekend, have a consistent finish, or possibly contend for the win? Obviously, Shane Van Gisbergen has an average finish of 1.5. He's won there in 2 races, never finished outside the top 5. So never finished outside the top 2, I should say. So he's certainly going to be probably somebody that everybody is going to be watching. But I'll tell you some others that are interesting. Chris Buescher has done well there in 3 races. Since 2023, he has 1 win, 2 top fives. Christopher Bell in 3 races, no wins, but 2 top fives since 2023. So those are some of the most recent averages that you can look at when going to Watkins Glen. So that is certainly something career wise, Chase Elliott. I misspoke. He does have two wins at Watkins Glen. That was just since 2023. So in nine races at Watkins Glen, he has those two wins. So he certainly could be somebody to watch this weekend in getting that win. So I'll be very curious. Christopher Bell, is, like I mentioned, is good there. Carson Hocevar in a short amount of time in two races, he's been good there. He's obviously got a lot of momentum. So those will be some guys to watch as we go into Watkins Glen and do a little road racing this weekend. I mentioned at the top of the show that I had a chance to catch up with Zane Smith and then Chase Briscoe. Both of those conversations were before the Texas race, but wanted to bring those to you, and we're going to do that coming up next. Zane Smith will be first up as you listen to Chasing Checkers again. Follow us on YouTube, subscribe on YouTube at Chasing Checkers and at 1025 The Game, and join us each week. We'll have Zane Smith coming up next here on Chasing Checkers.
This is Chasing Checkers. Your sports live here on the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Welcome back in. 1025 The Game. Chase McCabe with you and excited to talk a little racing. You know how much I love NASCAR, and we're excited to have Zane Smith with us, driver in the NASCAR Cup Series, fresh off a wild weekend at Talladega, but a top five finish for you guys. I know you have to be happy about that. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it was a great weekend for us. So our day started out kind of ugly with a pit road penalty, and obviously the first stage was a lot longer than what we normally have. And myself and kind of a group of drivers had just kind of an ugly pit road and an ugly start. And that somewhat saved us to be able to not completely lose the draft and have a few others to kind of stay with to make our lap time better, and then fall hard to get back on the lead lap, and fortunately caught a break coming to pit road, and then they wrecked down in turn three and four. So that felt great. Though it hurt a lot of people's day, but yeah, that was kind of our saving grace throughout the day. And so and then yeah, was able to race up inside the top 10 in stage two, and only get a stage point, but better than nothing. And then the final stage there, just I wish I was a few lanes forward to see if we could make something happen. But unfortunately, just those two lanes were a little too good, and it's pretty much impossible to create a third lane and make it work. I feel like points racing and yeah, the two lanes are just too dominant. And so no one really wanted to risk going up there, because we all know it's not going to stay. And so you're just kind of trying to push whoever was in front of you and hopefully see your lane propel forward.
Zane Smith is with us. You mentioned points racing, the points system changes back to the chase, but you've only known the playoff system in your Cup Series career. So has that changed kind of your strategy and your team's strategy at Front Row?
Yeah. I mean, I think you see us like not, play the super aggressive strategy, but at the same time, I feel like if we are having an off day or something, or just stuck with a not great track position, I feel like you'll still see those guys, and including ourselves, throw something at it and see if we can get ourselves up there, which I think you'll totally see this weekend at Texas. Like, that's, I mean, time and time again, you see guys that are just stuck in 20th and can't pass. So they'll take no tires or two tires, something different, and get themselves on the first row or first couple rows, and your car drives completely different. So outside of that, I feel like you're seeing less cautions and less like crazy mistakes where you'd see these guys just wreck a bunch and then go win a race. Like, those days are over. I feel like you got to minimize the DNFs and the bad days. And so, and then, yeah, make your good days really good days. So that's just what it's about. But I mean, I actually prefer this format definitely more than what we've had in the past on the playoff side. Just, I feel like this will reward a more of a legitimate, I don't want to say legitimate, that's such a bad word for it, but the proper champion. Like, I feel like the champion this year will be who had the best year all year round. In past years, it's been you could have an outstanding year and then the playoffs start and your year just does a 180, and right. And that sucks, and you're just not rewarded to how the beginning of year went. And so I'm happy about the change, and yeah, so there's still a ton of racing left. I know there's a big points lead right now, which a lot of people said there wouldn't be a runaway winner, but I think we're in like race 9 or 10, and yeah, there's 20 something races left. Like, that's a ton of game left. And so we'll see how this goes.
Well, and along those lines, you know, you look at somebody like Tyler, who has just been on fire to start this year. It took him a long time to find victory lane for the first time. Ty Gibbs just got his first win. Took him a long time to find victory lane. Same with Carson. So when you look at your career and yourself in Cup Series racing and just how hard it is to win, does that kind of looking at those guys, knowing that it does take a while, does that give you more patience as you just continue to get better and better with each passing year?
Yeah, I mean, whether you have the patience or not, I mean, you will learn how to adapt it either the easy way or the hard way once you get in the Cup Series. And yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to have a shot at multiple Cup races now, which I'm happy to say. It's frustrating that I haven't been able to get one yet. And I know Carson and I have the same amount of starts, and yeah, I feel like it depends on like where you're at in your career. This is my third year, and so my first rookie season was not great, and you know, you're just learning so much. It's just so much different than anything you've experienced. Then I felt like last year there was a lot of positive things, and then this year has been even more positive. And so we've unfortunately just had a few bad races, but all of them have been out of our control. And so we're just trying to control what we can. And to your point of trying to execute a win in the Cup Series is yeah, super hard. And then it's even harder to do it consistently. And just because when you're with a smaller team, the big teams take up a lot of those positions right away. You know, a Hendrick Motorsports and has four cars, a Penske has four cars, Gibbs has four cars, 2311, three cars, you know, RFK really fast this year. Like the spots fill up quick. And so anytime you could have a top 10, top five day and stack those days, that I feel like that's how you get your first win. And so just trying to put ourselves in contention more times than not.
Zane Smith is with us here on 102.5 The Game. Coming to Nashville at the end of May, I've had the opportunity of being the track announcer since the Cup Series came back. And I remember a run you had a few years ago finishing second in that race. What do you like about racing at Nashville?
Yeah, you know, Nashville, it's so odd, but I think it's a combination of it being a concrete racetrack. But I think I have probably like 5 second place finishes there. Yeah. Obviously once in the Cup car, but the rest are in the Truck Series. And yeah, for some reason, it's just been a great track for me, kind of going back to that finish, that second place finish, and having a shot at it in the Cup car in my rookie season. That kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, where I think some stuff you'll see this weekend at Texas, to where you might not like your car when you're 20th ish a lot of the day, and you try something different and your car just comes to life once it gets closer to the front. And so that's for sure something that'll happen at Nashville. But yeah, I mean, it's anywhere you go where you kind of the week of Monday, Tuesday, you go on socials or whatever and you see past stats of a racetrack that's been really good to you, it brings a level of confidence and makes you especially excited for that race. And so obviously definitely a fun group of fans that we always get there from Broadway, and yeah, it's cool. So excited to get there, and arguably one of the coolest trophies they give out as well. So hopefully could add one sooner or later to my collection.
Do you play guitar at all, or would you learn?
I do not play guitar, but I would love to get that trophy.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the coolest. You bring up Texas. Texas is probably one of my all-time favorite tracks. Does it still run as fast as it has in the past?
Yeah, I was actually talking about this the other day. I feel like Texas has got to be top three of a racetrack where people often ask us if, like, hey, do you feel like you're going like right at 200 miles an hour? And the honest answer is like, no, until you hit something. But when you go to a place like Texas, I kind of feel like Dover falls in that category. Vegas, maybe, like you feel the sensation of speed there. And so Texas especially, and I feel like from a driver's standpoint, you're just trying to find like a happy medium with both ends. One and two and three and four are so much different from each other. And so, yeah, you're never going to be happy at both. But with that said, I just feel like at Texas, you're on razor's edge the whole time, and that's where you're making speed. And so, it's always a cool one. Kind of talking about the fan base there too. Like, that's a really important one for us. I feel like we need to keep that alive, because Texas is a halfway point for a lot of our fan base. And so hopefully we give them a good show this weekend. And always excited to go there.
Well, Zane, best of luck this weekend, and obviously the rest of the way. We'll see you here in a few weeks in Nashville, but appreciate you taking the time today.
Cool, thanks.
Appreciate Zane Smith for joining the program as well. Coming up next, you'll hear a conversation with Chase Briscoe, driver of the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing, that Big Joe Dubin and I had just a few weeks ago before the Texas race. That's all ahead here on Chasing Checkers, presented by the Nashville Super Speedway and the Bruschetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix on 102.5 The Game.
You're listening to Chasing Checkers on the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Welcome back into Chasing Checkers here on 102.5 The Game. Be sure to subscribe, Chasing Checkers Radio on YouTube, and also the 102.5 The Game YouTube page. You can also get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Chasing Checkers. As I mentioned, the show presented by the Nashville Super Speedway, the Cracker Barrel 400 weekend, coming up at the end of this month, May 29th, 30th, and 31st, out at the Nashville Super Speedway. It is also presented by the Bruschetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix, coming your way July 19th, also at the Nashville Super Speedway. You can get tickets by going to NashvilleSuperspeedway.com or calling 866-RACE-TIX for both of those great events. Chase Briscoe was in town before the Texas race. He talked about Nashville and a lot of other things, including his season to this point, and joined me and Big Joe Dubin on our show. Here's that conversation.
We got another Chase joining the show. Chase Briscoe, driver of the number 19 Bass Pro Shops Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, the Nashville Super Speedway Cracker Barrel 400 weekend, a month away. Hard to believe. And Chase will be there with the rest of the NASCAR Cup Series. What's up, man? How are you?
Doing good. Yeah, excited to be in Nashville. It's always a cool spot to come to. So, yeah, looking forward to obviously coming back here at the end of May. But, yeah, excited to be here today.
Do you you like running out at the Super Speedway? I feel like most of you drivers typically do.
Yeah,
good side-by-side racing.
Yeah, for sure. It's a cool racetrack. And then just the area, right? Like, it's just a great area to come to. There's tons of stuff to do. It's one of those tracks where, you know, your wife and kids want to come. So, yeah, we always enjoy coming here.
There's nothing to do in Nashville either.
Yeah, nothing to do.
Talladega, we were just talking before we went on the air. Talladega's in the books, and I have a feeling you're happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it would have went better. But, yeah, definitely glad that I guess it's done and over with. I don't think we run a Super Speedway for like 3 or 4 months now. So, yeah, the Super Speedways are stressful for us.
Yeah.
You know, you're just, there's always big crashes. I mean, we saw that at Talladega. I think it was like
that
a 25-car
wreck.
So. Yeah, it was not ideal.
Like, what were I forgot where you were when that whole thing happened, but, like, what's going through your head when you see it all unfolding?
Yeah, so I was, like, literally fourth from last. We were kind of just saving fuel. There was nowhere to go. And we were three or four wide for, like, three laps in a row. And you could kind of sense it coming. But, yeah, I was able to, you know, start slowing down. There's just smoke everywhere, right? And then, this with the banking, everything slides down, and I was on the bottom and just kind of got cleaned out there at the end. So, yeah, it's hard when you're in one of those positions. I think, you know, out of all the guys that were back, only two guys got through there, and it was Hosevar and Denny, and the rest of us were all wiped up in it.
Yeah, it was wild. When you're in those situations, I mean, obviously I get a different perspective watching from TV or on a monitor or something. You can kind of see how it happens. Is your initial thought before you go back and watch it, all right, who did something stupid?
I was totally surprised at last week's wreck. Just because we were 3 and 4 wide, like, I had no idea it started from the lead. A bad push. I thought it was kind of right in the mid-pack. So I was actually surprised when I went back and watched it that it started at the front, because just how we were running 3 and 4 wide, like, I could, like I said, sense it coming. And then when I went back and watched it, I didn't know it was from a bad push or whatever. So, yeah, it kind of caught me off guard.
You finished second in Atlanta. I know you want to win the race. Finishing second, you're so close. Is it frustrating? Are you pleased? Are you happy? Are you like, nah?
Atlanta was the second race of the year. So that one, you're just like glad to have a good finish, truthfully,
right.
So early in the year. And then, the week before was the Daytona 500. We got taken out there. I think we finished like 35th. So, yeah, I was okay with second. I mean, as okay as you can be. But that was one of those ones I felt like I could have won, if I just had another lap. So, yeah, it kind of just depends on the circumstances. Now looking back on it, I'm glad we at least finished second and didn't wreck at that one.
Right.
Because I think we had 3 DNFs in a row after that. So, yeah, it was just a rough start to our season. That was kind of the only bright spot there for a while. So, yeah, it just depends on your situation, where you're at in the season. Second, I mean, it still stinks, especially when you're that close.
Yeah, right. So you got the pole for Daytona. What's that 24 hours like before the race starts and you get the pole? I got to think it's great. It's pressure. It's everything you want to be as a race car driver.
Yeah, so Daytona is kind of unique because, for the Daytona 500, we actually qualify on Wednesday. So early
before
the race.
That's right.
And so, you qualify on the pole, and then you just do media like crazy. And it's nuts. I've been able to, win the pole for other races, and you might do a couple of interviews. But the Daytona 500, I mean, it is a full 5-6 hours of just interview after interview, and you don't realize how big of a deal it is, truthfully,
right,
to start on the pole of the Daytona 500. But, that Saturday night and when you wake up Sunday morning, it's a cool feeling knowing that you're starting on the front row of the Daytona 500 and just coming to the green. I make it a point, really, every week, no matter where we're racing at, wherever I start, to just kind of look up in the grandstands and kind of take it in for a second. And doing that at the Daytona 500 from the front row, it's a totally different feeling.
Do you always get the Mike Joy's like, nobody's won, taking the pole one Daytona the first year since 1958, whatever it is. I mean, there's all those things like, you're better off not getting the pole.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, definitely nobody's won from the pole in a long time
here.
And this year we actually qualified second. I was joking, Kyle Busch got the pole. I told him right before we went out to qualify, I said, I'll gladly let you get the pole. I'll just take second because I don't have to do any of the media stuff that way.
Right.
It's a huge deal for the team, truthfully, to be able to start on the front row. But, statistically, it's crazy how, the pole sitter just hasn't won that race in a really, really long time.
How cool you talk about taking that moment to look into the stands. Do you do, at Bristol and at Darlington, everywhere?
Yeah, every week I normally try to do that, just for the initial start of the race. Just and kind of realize it's like a pinch me moment every time I do it. Like, man, you're getting to race in the Cup Series. And, it's cool, especially at the Daytona 500 when it's a sold-out crowd, 200,000 people there. It's one of those races, as a kid, you grow up watching all the time. And then to know that you're actually leading the field of green in one of the most iconic races, it's pretty cool.
Awesome.
At Bristol, especially the night race, can you hear the crowd inside the car?
Yeah. Under caution, you can. Yeah. Under green, you can't. But under caution, definitely can. And it's crazy. At Daytona and Talladega, I'll hear it under green just because your spotter's always keyed up and talking.
Oh, yeah.
So if something happens, I can normally hear the crowd, start yelling and something. At some tracks, you can hear them under caution. Bristol's one of them. Martinsville's another one. North Wilkesboro. The tracks where they're super, super close, you can definitely hear them under caution.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So if you were to win here at Nashville, you get the guitar.
Yeah.
A lot of you drivers love the guitar. Are you going to learn to play it?
I don't know. I used to be able to do just Smoke on the Water.
Okay,
the chorus.
Well, there you go.
I don't even remember now. I was real little when I did it. But, that's probably about the extent of my guitar playing.
Okay.
My 4-year-old would love it, though.
See, that's what a lot of the answers are. My kid would probably learn how to play it. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Go back to your spotter for a second. Is the spotter communication ever gone out during a race?
It's happened to people before. It's happened to me, just where it's real fuzzy and staticky, you guys live it, right, with radio.
Yeah.
It's not always perfect. So, sometimes, especially at road courses, we might be a mile away sometimes from where he's at. So he's talking. I don't even hear it. But I've never had it just completely go out.
No, that's right. So if the crew chief's got to give you a message, is he able to talk to you?
It depends on where I'm at on the racetrack. So typically the spotter I can always hear because he's up on top of the grandstand, so his signal is the best. But, I mean, literally last week at Talladega, for example, when I'm on the back straightaway, my crew chief can talk to me, but it's pretty staticky. I can't really hear it that great. So normally he'll relay the message through the spotter, and the spotter will tell it to me.
Oh, okay. Fascinating about all this. Yeah. Was Drew your spotter at SHR or just with Gibbs?
No, just at Joe Gibbs.
Okay. So was there an adjustment going from?
Yeah, it's really hard whenever you switch spotters, just because of the trust that you have to have in that person.
Yeah,
I mean, literally Daytona or Talladega, they're looking through binoculars at, I don't know, 3/4 of a mile away, and they're clearing you by an inch sometimes less. And if you hesitate, I mean, a tenth of a second, you're going to crash the field. So you really have to just have this cadence and this trust with each guy. And you know, I've worked with probably 4 or 5 different spotters now, and, you know, you can hear it in their voice sometimes. And yeah, the relationship you have with that person is huge, especially when you go super speedway racing, because they're not driving the car, but they're really painting the picture for what's happening and what moves to make. So, yeah, they're really kind of the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and the defensive coordinator at the super speedway races. And, yeah, having that trust with them is really, really important.
Chase Briscoe is with us, driver of the number 19 for Joe Gibbs Racing. You got to drive for Tony Stewart. Now you drive for the team that Tony Stewart drove for with Joe Gibbs. That's got to be a pretty cool part of your career.
It's definitely super cool. I mean, I grew up a diehard Tony Stewart fan. I mean, we grew up 45 minutes apart in Indiana. And so for me as a kid, Tony was like my idol. And when I started trying to do the NASCAR thing, I mean, I remember telling my parents, like, man, it would be a dream come true if I could somehow, like, drive the 14 car. That would be the one I would pick. And then I got to go drive for Tony Stewart in the 14 car. And then when that team shut down, to be able to just so happen go to Joe Gibbs Racing. I mean, as a kid, I would wear my Home Depot Joe Gibbs Racing Tony Stewart fire suit and play my video games. And so it's crazy how it's all kind of worked out to where, you know, now I'm getting to drive for Coach. And just to even be behind the scenes with Coach. And I mean, the guy's 85 years old, I want to say. And just to learn from the knowledge that he has, it's pretty unbelievable.
So he asked me one time, like, you know, who are the cool people you've gotten to meet in racing and stuff? And, you know, it's like, okay, Dale Jr. and whatever. But my answer is always Coach Gibbs.
Yeah.
It was the 2014 Daytona 500. And I'm just cruising through the garage area. It's my first time there. I'm barely in the media business. And I'm just, you know, like bright-eyed and everything. And here comes Coach. And in my head, I'm like, I mean, do I say hi? Do I say something? And it was just like, Coach Gibbs, how you doing? Introduce myself. And he's like, well, son, how are you? And like, was the nicest guy.
Yeah, awesome.
You want a picture? And yeah. And it was just like, this guy's won 3 Super Bowls and multiple cups. And it's just what, you know, so I can only imagine what it's like for you to be able to drive for him.
Yeah, just to get to be around him. And he's so good at like motivating people. You can see why he was such a successful football coach. And just, I asked him, we were going on a trip somewhere, I'm like, when you went back and coached the second time, like, what was different? And he's like, well, the game changed a lot, but the thing that didn't change is what motivates people. And, you know, it's the same for us in NASCAR, right? So, yeah, it's been really fun just getting to learn from Coach. My favorite Coach story is he always carries the Super Bowl ring. He's got one of the 3 always on him. And he'll, like, let people take pictures with it and stuff. We were flying somewhere, and he was digging through his briefcase. And he's just like, oh, my gosh, there it is. I found it. And he pulls down. He's like, this is my Super Bowl ring, another one. Like, he has one wearing it, and this one found his briefcase. And he said, I've been looking for this thing for, like, 7 months. I thought I lost it. And it was just, he has Super Bowl ring in his briefcase.
That's amazing.
Has he ever yelled at you?
He's not yelled at me. No. I've seen him get upset, though. It's crazy. It's very rare when it happens. But when he does, the football coach definitely comes out, and you're like, holy smokes. Because he's just this, like, super amazing, like, soft-spoken, nice guy. And I think that's where, like, the football guys, I couldn't imagine, like, when he finally gets on you, you feel like you let the world down.
Yeah.
Because he never gets like that. But I've seen it happen a couple times, but never directly at me.
Well, it's great. He won 3 Super Bowls with 3 different starting quarterbacks. So, I mean, his ability to adapt works well in NASCAR, I would think.
Oh, 100%. I mean, our rules change every other year. The cars change. And, for him to be able to stay on top of his game as an owner, for as long as he has, it's pretty unbelievable just the amount of things that he's been able to build. And he didn't grow up racing. Like, he'll tell right. you that. Like, he had no racing background. He went to the drag races and stuff. But other than that, it was just like this dream on a napkin that turned into what it is now with over 400 employees.
I think it's amazing. How did you get started?
So I grew up in a racing family. My dad, my grandpa actually started owning sprint cars, dirt cars in the 70s from Indiana, which is kind of a hotbed for sprint car racing. And, yeah, my dad raced for 20 years. And so I grew up going to the racetrack and then moved to Charlotte literally right after I graduated high school and slept on a couch for 3.5 years and just volunteered all these race shops. And eventually this team owner that was a multimillionaire thought it was cool that this kid was sleeping on a couch and volunteering and decided to let me run a race. And it just spiraled from there. And we won the championship. And then I got signed and kind of went through the ladder system in NASCAR.
Wow. Why, being from Indiana, I'm curious of this, why NASCAR and not IndyCar?
For me, I was a diehard Tony Stewart fan. He obviously did Indy as well. But when I was growing up, Tony was super heavy in the NASCAR stuff. And you had Tony Stewart, you had Jeff Gordon, Casey Kane. Like, those were all guys that grew up sprint car racing like I did that went to NASCAR. And for me, I just, you know, outside of the month of May, I never would really have IndyCar, you know, racing on our TV. But NASCAR was on every single Sunday. If we were, you know, driving to the sprint car track, the NASCAR was on the radio. So for me, like, NASCAR was always a thing that, like, if you're the top tier, that's where you go. And, you know, I love Indianapolis and Indy 500, but for me, my goal was always to make it to NASCAR, just because the guys that I grew up kind of idolizing in racing, that's where they all went.
Would you want to try the double one day?
If I didn't have a wife and kids, I think I probably would. You know, I literally love the month of May. I watch every single practice, everything. But truthfully, I just don't have the desire, you know, especially with a wife and kids. I don't want to risk getting hurt and stuff. And I always tell people I would love to start and park the Indy 500. I want to do the pre-race. I want to do the pace lap. I want to take the green flag and then just lap one, pull it in, and just be a fan. I've wrecked at 200, and I have no desire to wreck at 240. Yeah. And, yeah, those guys, they're pretty incredible at what they do.
Have you ever driven one?
I've never driven one, no.
I'd be so, like, I mean, I've been in a stock car, but I it's a rocket ship with wheels.
It was neat. You know, other guys have done the double, right? Like Kurt Busch and whatnot.
Larson just did it.
Yeah, with Larson just doing it, that was the first person, like, I've known that actually went and done it. And, you know, I was racing against him while I did it. And to listen to him talk about how similar, really, it is. It drives very similar to what we do now. And you would think they would be drastically different. But, yeah, it was fun to watch him kind of go through that process. And, you know, and when IndyCar guys come and hang out with us, it's crazy how much the two cross over.
We'll continue with Chase Briscoe coming up next here on Chasing Checkers on 102.5 The Game.
Chasing Checkers is on The Game Nashville Sports Network.
Welcome back into Chasing Checkers, 102.5 The Game, presented by the Nashville Super Speedway. They'll be racing there May 29th through the 31st for the Cracker Barrel 400 weekend. You can get your tickets by going to NashvilleSuperspeedway.com or calling 866-RACE-TIX. Also, the Bruschetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix, July 19th at the Nashville Super Speedway. You can go to those same websites or make that call, or go to MusicCityGP.com as well. Continuing our conversation with Chase Briscoe, the number 19 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota, who you will see here in about a month out at Nashville.
Carson Hocevar gets his first win. Ty Gibbs, your teammate, gets his first win a few weeks ago. We're seeing some of these guys finally make it to victory circle. But I asked Christopher Bell this, and I'll ask you the same thing. You know, it took you a minute to find victory lane for the first time. Does that just show you how difficult these things are and how hard it is to win?
Yeah, the Cup Series is a whole nother animal.
I mean,
it is just crazy. I mean, when you're going through the O'Reilly Series or the Truck Series, I mean, you're realistically racing, I don't know, 7-8 guys, right?
Yeah.
On a kind of consistent basis. Where when you get to the Cup Series, like, all 36 guys have won their entire career. And they're just really, really good. Like, you can run a perfect race and still struggle to run top five. Like, the Cup Series is just so tight. So, yeah, it's a hard thing to win. And all the guys that, whether it was Hocevar or Ty, I texted both of them after and was just like, man, there's nothing like winning your first Cup race. Just the sense of accomplishment you get, because it's hard, like, to win a Cup race. And just when you lay your head down at night after winning a Cup race, like, you know you've beat the best. And it's a really cool feeling.
Was how popular of a win for Joe Gibbs Racing was Ty, knowing how hard he's worked all the family stuff,
yeah.
You know, losing his dad and everything, going through that. I mean, I have to have a feeling that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool to just be able to be a part of that, right? Like,
yeah.
If I would have been at Stewart Haas Racing, like, it would have been cool to see him get his first win, but I wouldn't have got to see the behind the scenes and, like, the celebration and, like, just even for Coach, like, to get to witness
yeah.
it, right? And, like, Pat came, Coach's wife. I think they've won over 300 races as a company. She's never been to a banner ceremony.
Oh,
like,
cool.
She came to ties. Like, just for – to see how much it meant to the whole family, it was really, really cool. So, yeah, just to be able to be a part of that and to be inside the four walls when Ty got his first, it was a really special thing to be a part of.
You go to Texas this week. We asked Chris Bell this last week about simulators and knowing the speedway. How well do you know Texas Speedway? Do you need to get in the simulator to know it better? How do you scout this race?
Yeah, so we're running the simulator every single week, no matter where we're going. You know, some weeks it's normally anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, but like road course next week, I'll run probably 12 plus hours. So it really depends on the racetrack. But Texas is a tough one because we only go there once a year, so it changes a lot. You know, a lot of these tracks we go to twice, sometimes in the spring, sometimes in the fall. But when you're going to these places that you only go to once, and especially at a place like Texas where, you know, the summer and the winters are so extreme, like the track just changes drastically.
Wow.
From a surface standpoint, you know, Texas has this huge bump in turns 3 and 4, and it gets bigger every time we go. So it's one of those, I mean, we can guess, right, and expect what we think it's going to be. But until you get there and actually get to run on it, you never really know.
So you just get the 2 laps to qualify, that's it?
We get 20 minutes of practice, and then, yeah, 2 laps of qualifying. And like Texas, I mean, I think our minimum speed in turns 3 and 4 is probably like 180, 185.
Ooh.
It's very high commitment. So, yeah, it's a tough one to go to.
So you know that by the time you get to the speedway, the flag drops, you guys take off. I mean, you know that speedway for the – you got to, right? Know most of it?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely know, like, all the ins and outs just because you've ran so many laps on the simulator. And plus, like, you have experience there. Like, little things change, right? But for the most part, the simulator does it. I mean, they're laser scanned down to the thousandth of an inch. So,
wow.
I mean, everything
yeah.
is pretty spot on. You know, the craziest thing for me, we ran Mexico City last year for the first time. Nobody had ever been there. I think my fastest lap of the entire weekend was lap 3. And, like, all I'd ran was the simulator up until that point. So that just shows you how dialed in the simulators are now. I mean, literally, when we ran the Chicago Street Race, for example, every skyscraper that's in the background is there. Every tree
yeah.
that
nice.
Is in the park is there because you don't. Every driver kind of uses different visual references, so they literally go down to everything. Every crack that's on the racetrack is there,
there
in the simulator.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that does iRacing do that, or is that something?
No, it's
different?
A completely separate
yeah.
Company. It's actually called rFactor.
Okay. But I feel like iRacing is pretty
accurate. Yeah, iRacing does a really good job. The best way I can explain it is, you know, iRacing, you know, from a track, you know, visual standpoint, it's really, really good. It's almost
yeah.
like 4K, right?
Yeah.
But the track surface itself is probably like 1080p. It's really accurate, but it's not down to the, you know, legitimate scale. Where ours, you know, visually, like, it doesn't look like you're playing on a 4K. It looks
yeah.
1080p-ish, but the surface itself is definitely 4K. Like, it is as close can get. So it's kind of the opposite. iRacing visually looks a little bit better, but our surface is probably better.
Now, when you get in the sim, are you in the full race suit and
no,
everything? Or?
No, it kind of depends. So we have sims at Joe Gibbs Racing, which is literally like just screens. It doesn't move.
Yeah.
You're just sitting there in a chair. And then we have one at Toyota, which is literally a full-blown car. The screen, you know, is 12 foot tall, wraps all the way around you. The thing moves. You're in a full-blown seat, belted in, helmet. It's a little more intense. You know, I won't use that one other than road courses. So, yeah, it just kind of depends on the week.
Very cool. Let me ask you this, Chase. What's the craziest spot you've been recognized?
Craziest spot I've been recognized? Oh, gosh. I have no idea.
Bar lines at the Omni Nashville Hotel.
Yeah. I was shopping with my wife in Nashville last year. We were at, I don't know, some little boutique. I'm not a big boutique guy, obviously.
No.
And some guy was like, hey, are you? And I was like, yeah. And I never would have thought in a boutique I would get recognized. So that's up there for sure.
Is it now for you kind of like, hey, it's cool, like, you know, take a picture or whatever?
Yeah,
I
think it's super cool. It's crazy to me that I get to do what I do, truthfully.
Yeah.
And it's been wild just over the last 18 months, really, like, going from, you know, not the top top-tier ride to all of a sudden being, like, a competitor week in and week out, like, at the racetrack especially, just the difference in people recognizing me, I guess, and like, wanting autographs and stuff. You know, as you run better, more and more people want your stuff, and that's been cool, like, for me to go to the racetrack and see more and more 19 stuff, you know, where in the past, like, there was some 14 stuff there, but it wasn't really, like, everywhere, where now with the 19 stuff, Bass Pro certainly helps that. People want to wear Bass Pro shops, but it's been cool to get to experience that.
Is there somebody that's walked to the garage that's looking at your garage that's famous? You're like, holy cow, look at this. Not a starstruck moment, but like, oh, man.
So this is funny. Michael Jordan's at the track all the time, right?
Yeah.
I've never got to talk to Michael. I've always, like, not been
Come
nervous,
on, Denny. Denny's got to help you out there.
I know.
There.
It's just never worked out. But I always tell my wife, so I'm like, I want to know, like, does Michael Jordan know who I am? Like, if he heard my name, would he be like, oh, yeah, this is so-and-so? And so me and Noah Graxton were doing something the other week, and he's like, talking about Michael and how he just goes up and daps him up every week. And he showed me this video of, like, Michael introduced Noah to his wife, and he's like, yeah, Noah drives the four car. He's like, I'm telling you, he'll know everything about you. He watches every lap. So last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago, he won the race, and he was walking by our car, and I was like, this is my shot. And I just walked up and was like, hey, man, congrats or whatever. And we talked for, like, I don't know, a minute maybe, and I was like, holy smokes, like, that was Michael Jordan. That's pretty sick.
Did he know who you were?
Yeah, he was like, thanks, man. I mean, I'm assuming he knew who I was.
Right.
So, yeah, it was cool, though.
Oh, that's
and
great.
This is another quick little story. So at that Atlanta race where I finished second, I pushed Michael's car, the 45 Tyler Reddick, to the win. And so in our debrief Monday, they were like, hey, thanks for, you know, pushing us to the win. I'm like, hey, no problem. Size 13 shoe. Just like joking. And so the next week, They brought me, like, 7 pairs of Jordans.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, like, 3 weeks later, the guy that runs kind of 2311 texted me randomly. He's like, hey, what size shoe do you wear? And I was like, size 13. And so at the debrief, like, this is 4 or 5 weeks after the event, he hands me a box of shoes, and I get out to my truck. I'm like, I bet MJ signed these. He did not sign them. It was just another pair they had forgotten.
Oh, that's so
well,
bad.
But Denny, I mean, like, are you and Denny tight enough that, like, he could probably, like...
I asked Denny, and he was like, I can assure you that Michael definitely knows who you are.
That's awesome. What's it like having Denny as kind of the veteran guy on the team?
It's been very eye-opening to me just to get to... I mean, Denny kind of has, I think, this perception from the outside of kind of how he is, and being on the inside... That guy works so hard. It's unbelievable. It reminds me so much of being teammates with Kevin Harvick. Like, somebody that's, you know, 45, kind of tail end of their career, you would think they'd kind of be checked out to a certain extent, and they're working harder than anybody in the sport. So it's been very eye-opening from that standpoint.
I have especially a few years ago in Atlanta, this was probably like 2021, I go down there to cover the race, and they do, like, they brought all you guys in to do, like, some one-on-ones and stuff. Like, it was – coming on the backside of COVID, and so the access was back. And he was talking about leaving the sport better than he left it, and, like, trying to do what's right by the drivers and stuff. And I just sat there and listened to him, and I said, I was like, why do you feel like you need to be the one to do that? And he goes, because nobody else is, and I want this to be good for the guys that are here after me. And I ended up doing an interview with him at the awards a little bit later, and I brought that up, and I said, like, I gained so much more respect for you, like, hearing you talk about that, because, like, Denny the driver is a jerk, like, he's just, like, he's gonna you know, he's one of those guys, like, I'd wreck my mother to win. But how much he cares about the sport, I think, is really telling, and he truly does want to leave it better than the way he found it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. From a competitor standpoint, you don't want to race against Diddy.
Right.
But outside of that, yeah, he does a ton. I mean, and I think he's in a very unique spot now, right, with owning 2311, where from, like, even helping the driver standpoint, and you saw that with the lawsuit and, like, the team owners. I mean, what he did for just Coach, like, doing that lawsuit – it was a huge thing for all the owners and really the sport in general. It literally changed the sport.
Yeah.
Before you go, are you wearing Jordans?
Yeah. Well, not today. I normally always wear Jordans. I got Nikes on today.
Yeah. Okay.
But normally I'm – because Michael apparently checks that out. I was never – I was a Jordan – as a kid I had Jordans,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the last couple of years, my wife would get mad. I'd wear the same pair of shoes for 3 years. Like, right. I don't care.
I'm the same way.
And then when I went to JGR – I went and bought like 10, 15 pairs of shoes. Now I got like all kinds of different colored Jordans. So, yeah, I kind of got suckered into being like all the other guys.
Well, see, I wear size 13 too. Yeah. It's not easy to find shoes.
It's hard to find size 13 shoes.
So it's like you find one you like, you just wear it until it falls apart.
See,
you
know, his name is Chase too, right?
Right.
So he's hoping that you'll get that.
Yeah.
You'll come back like, oh, Chase, who's that?
Yeah, I got some
extra 13 for it. Yeah. Don't fall for it, Chase.
Hey,
don't
appreciate the time. Yeah, good luck at Texas, and we'll see you in about a month here in Nashville.
And my thanks to both Zane Smith and Chase Briscoe. Hope you enjoyed those interviews from a couple of weeks ago, but wanted to bring them to you here on the program. We're going to be doing this every week. Again, as I said at the top of the show, we've added a video element, so be sure to subscribe to both the 102.5 The Game YouTube page at 102.5 The Game and at Chasing Checkers as well, because we're going to bring all of this content to you via video, and wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to Chasing Checkers as well. That is going to do it for us this week. Again, you can tune in to 94.9 The Fan coming up on Sunday, and you can hear Racing from the Glen as soon as Sounds Baseball is over. Should be right at the start of the race, so be sure to check that out on 102.5 The Game. I'm Chase McCabe. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the racing out there. We'll talk to you next week.